Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ata va mad abhishnehat. Ata va mad abhishnehat. Ata va mad abhishnehat. Bhavatyo yantritashaya. Bhavatyo yantritashaya. Bhavatyo yantritashaya. Atava madabishnehat. Bhavatyo yantritashaya. Agata hi upapanam. Va agata hi upapanam va agata hi upapanam va priyante mai jantava priyante mai jantava priyante mai jantava Agata or else mat abhishnehat because of love for me bhavatya you yantrita subjugated ashayaha your hearts agataha have come he indeed, upapanam, fitting, va, on your part, priyante, have affection, mai, for me, jantava, all living beings. Translation. On the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part, since all living entities possess natural affection for me. Please repeat. On the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part. Since all living entities possess natural affection for me. So we see that in the previous few verses that Krishna, he's been teasing the Sakyas and saying, oh, you know, you should go home and look after your children and look after your, you know, husbands, etc. like that. And, you know, he's saying, oh, they'll be running around looking for you, they'll be worried about you, different things like that. And I was just reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Someone asked a question the other day. I wasn't completely sure of the answer on it. Whether these girls were married or unmarried. And according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that some were married and some were not married. And even the gopis who were Munichari gopis, they also had husbands. So there's a bit of a mixture there. Yes, so up until this point, Krishna has been teasing them and in a sense, I would say, testing them to see how serious they are. And he's seeing, you know, that actually because they're becoming quite disturbed that Krishna's teasing them like this, because as we understand, you know, that Krishna is the only thing that they are interested in. They're not interested in their families, they're not interested in their husbands and children or anything like that. They're simply interested in serving and pleasing Krishna. So then Krishna, he here in this verse, he's saying, on the other hand, perhaps you've come here out of your great love for me. And the acharyas in their commentaries, they point out that Krishna, because when we read the Bhagavatam, that just gives generally a synopsis. Sometimes it goes into great detail, but a lot of times with these types of stories here, it just gives a synopsis of what's going on. Whereas you can read in the writings of the various acharyas, they go into great depth about the conversations. And Krishna here is saying, oh, I think I misunderstood what you were, your reasons for coming here. And he says, now I can actually see that you came here out of great affection for me. So he's, again, he's still playing with them, just teasing them. And this is something that's very typical. Typical is like a very common word, but very, it's part of the relationship that's there. Krishna likes this. He likes the pleasure. He gets a lot of pleasure out of teasing them. And then, it's like Prabhupada would sometimes say, he said that married life, it means that you argue, then you kiss and make up. So it's kind of like that. He's creating some conflict there. And then after the conflict's been created, the gopis, they get all emotionally disturbed and it increases their attachment. He's inciting them, to become more and more attached. He's inciting them to, come on, say something. He's just winding them up, and I'm sure that anyone who's ever had a relationship, with a member of the opposite sex, you like doing that. You like, winding them up a little bit to say, okay, what are you going to say? And then so they respond, and sometimes, especially not so much some actually there's two main groups of gopis. One's headed by Chandravali and one's headed by Radharani. So Chandravali, her group's very compliant. They just generally go along with whatever Krishna says, but Radharani, etc., they get a little bit fiery sometimes, and Radharani doesn't mind, giving Krishna a piece of her mind sometimes. So we see that, if you read the commentaries of the acharyas, you'll see that the gopis are also, playing the game, but at the same time they're getting quite upset. yet we see here that finally Krishna is turning around and he's saying, okay, now, oh, actually, it seems like you've come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your heart. So he's starting to say, oh, actually, you didn't have a choice in the matter. Because you love me so much, you just pushed to come here. And one point that's very interesting here, there's no purport to this verse, so maybe we can just discuss this for a little while and then move on to some of the other verses. But one thing that's I find very interesting here in this verse is this section. It says, Priyante mai jantava. So this means that actually this jantava means all living entities, and priyante, have affection, mai, for me. So Krishna's pointing out to the gopis that actually all living entities have this natural affection for him. And the interesting thing is that some people know this, but most people don't. You find that is most people in this world have no idea that they're lovers of Krishna. And you read in the introduction to the Krishna book, which is written by George Harrison, and he points out there also that living entities are all looking for Krishna. There's just some know it, but some do not. And the situation is that actually most people in this world have no idea that they have this natural attraction or natural affection for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And why is that? This is explained by Krishna Das Kaviraj. He says in the Gita, he says, Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishnera Nityadas. Krishnera Tatasta Shakti Beda Ved Prakash. He's explaining that actually all the living entities, their eternal constitutional position is to be a servant of God. This is their nature. It's just like Prabhupada, you'll often hear Prabhupada talking about Dharma. He says religion means the nature. So what is religion? Religion means to be a lover of God. Essentially this is what religion is. And this is the nature, this is the Dharma, the Swadharma. There's different types of Dharma, but we hear different types of Varnashram, there's different types of Dharma, but the Swadharma, the actual constitutional nature of a living entity, is to be a lover of God. And why? Krishna Das Kaviraj says, Krishnera Tatasta Shakti Beda Ved Prakash, because they're all the living entities are actually energies of Krishna, marginal energy, a manifestation simultaneously different, but non-different from the Lord. And I was listening to this very interesting lecture yesterday, where Prabhupada was talking about this nature of the living entity. I just thought I'd mention this point. I found it quite interesting. He's saying that the living entities were all originally Krishna conscious, that all originally had a loving relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, how is it possible for them to develop it now? How is it possible to come to that state if we weren't originally in that state? Because we are eternal. And eternal means no change. Without beginning, without end. Eternal means no change. If it changes, it's not eternal. So Prabhupada was making this point very nicely, that because we're developing this loving relationship for Krishna now, it means we had it before. Because you can't change the nature of the living entity. You can't change the nature of the spirit soul. So this is factually the situation of the living entity, is that we all are lovers of Krishna. Every single one of us, all the human beings, all, you know, there's 400,000 types of human beings. There's, let's see, I think there's 300 million types of aquatics, there's 200 million types, 3 million types of aquatics, 2 million types of plants. I forget all the different numbers. 900,000 aquatics, okay, and there's 2 million plants, and there's 3 million... forget all the different numbers, but there's just so many different living entities, 8 million other living entities, and they're all servants of Krishna. They're all lovers, not just servants, but they're all lovers of Krishna. This is actually the constitutional nature of the living entity, to have a loving relationship with Krishna. And that is what this process of Krishna consciousness is all about. It's not coming up with something new. It's not inventing something that's not there. Because it is there. This is also explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It says, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Savukavanaya Shavanadi Sutta Chitta Karodai. But it's there. This Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. It's there. Where is it? In the heart. It says, Chitta. The Chitta means the heart. Also can mean consciousness. But it's, in this verse is pointing out that it's Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. There's Nitya Siddha, this eternal perfection, Krishna Prema of love of Godhead. Sabukhabu Nyaya, Shavanadi Sute Chitte. So Shavanadi, by hearing and other, all the other things, Shravana means hearing, Adi means all the other things, just like we chant Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Srivas Adi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. So Srivas and all the other devotees. So this word Adi, sometimes it can mean one or original or first, but in other senses also means and all the others. Yeah? So it says Shravan Adi. So it means by Shravan Adi and all the other, you know, the nine processes of devotional service. Sude Chitte, it's there in the pure heart. Yeah? It's actually there in the heart. When it says Sude Chitte, it doesn't refer to this lump of matter that's sort of pulsating in your chest, but actually refers to the original pure consciousness of the living entity. Karayodai. And this Karayodai means doing, or it means it's an action word, or I think you call action words and verbs, aren't they? I didn't do so well in English. A verb is a doing word. There you go. It's doing. Back to grade three. And it says udai means awoken. So by doing this bhajan, you know, our bhajana kriya, our practice, our activities of devotional service, you know, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc., all these different activities that are given by Prahlad Maharaj, then this natural consciousness of the living entity is awoken within the heart through the practices of devotional service. And this consciousness is, as Krishna says here, he says, Priyante mai jantava, that all living entities are naturally attracted to Krishna. So by the process of devotional service, by engaging in the process of devotional service, then one's original consciousness is reawoken. And as Prabhupada explains, he says, this chanting of Hare Krishna is not an artificial imposition upon the mind. You know, we see that people are, you know, they're engaging in so many different practices you look at some of these so-called, I do say so-called religions, that the practices they're following are actually just some mental concoction. They've made it up. Just because it, you know, sounds good. Like Prabhupada would often talk about nose-pressing yoga. I used to do that years ago. You sit there and And I felt so stupid. Just sitting there, pressing on my nose, breathing in through this one, then blowing out through that one. You have to do 9 times in this one, then 9 times out that one. Then reverse it 9 times in this one, 9 times out that one. And I just, you know, I did it for some time, and then one day I just sort of reflected. I thought, God, I feel stupid doing this. I mean, what's the point of it, you know? So then I gave that up and went on to something else, you know. But that was, you know, it's just a creative sort of a process. You know, you just make up your own process and follow it. Yeah, we see that it's pointed out by Rupa Goswami. It's a nice verse, and if I can remember it, you'll be able to appreciate it. Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatik Vidimvina Aikantika Haram Bhaktir Utpataya Iva Kalpataya. Very nice. He says, Shruti Smriti Puranadi. So the Shrutis, the Vedas, the Smriti, the corollary scriptures, those that help us to remember, yeah? Smriti, Smaram, same sort of thing, Krishna. Puranadi, the Puranas, Shruti Smriti Puranadi, Pancharatrika Vidimvina, and the Pancharatras. There's actually hundreds and hundreds of Pancharatric texts, such as, you know, Narad Pancharatra, Brahma Samhita is also counted as a Pancharatra. Many Pancharatric texts, which have as their goal the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Seva to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vidim Vina, and all these other, you know, Vidis, rules, Vina. So Rupa Goswami is pointing out there that this so-called practices of devotional service, he says so-called, that aren't practiced according to the Shrutis, the Smritis, Puranas, the Pancharatras, that aren't followed, you know, according to religious or, you know, scriptural injunctions, etc. He says, utpatayaiva kalpate. They simply serve as a disturbance in society. And we see that. We see that. What happens is that someone will make up a process of religion. You know? And what happens is that unsuspecting, innocent people, they see this, they say, oh, this looks very devotional, I will follow this. And you see, you know, sometimes you see, you know, people coming to the temple and they offer their obeisances in all sorts of funny ways. You know, they kiss the steps, they put their cheek on this way, they put this cheek on this way, they pull their ears off this, they poke their tongue out. Do all sorts of interesting things. And while they're doing it, they're facing the deities and they've got their feet to Srila Prabhupada. Right? Don't understand, you know, that Prabhupada is a great Vaishnava. He should be respected. You never show the base of your feet to a great Vaishnava. It's considered very disrespectful. Yet because they're not studying the Shastra, or they've studied some, you know, they've read someone's presentation, interpretation, you know, of the scriptures, is just like, you know, like Srila Prabhupada. He has presented the scriptures and he's given commentaries on the scriptures, but not according to his own opinion, not according to his own feelings on the matter. You know, well, I think it's like that. And actually, we see that Prabhupada would say sometimes, he says, you're saying, I think, go stand in the closet. As soon as his disciples would say, well, I think it's like this, Prabhupada said, go stand in the closet. Yeah? No, it's not down to what we think. It's down to the commentaries of the acharyas, you know, the commentaries of the realized personalities. And we see that with the acharyas, many of our acharyas, you can hear pastimes, how they were directly seeing Krishna. Not like they had to imagine something or maybe it's like this, I wonder if Krishna does this. No, directly participating in the pastimes of Krishna. And we see with personalities like Rupa Goswami descended directly from the spiritual world. In his spiritual form, he's Rupa Manjari. He's a direct associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah? And, you know, other of the acharyas, you know, also have come directly from the Lord's pastimes to come here to this world to demonstrate to us the process of devotional service. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he came to this world to demonstrate to us how to practice the process of devotional service. So there need be no doubt in our mind, you know, how to perform devotional service. What are the symptoms of one who's greatly advanced in devotional service? What's the behavior of one who's greatly advanced in devotional service? Just like you look at the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the way he conducted himself. And he gave this great direction on proper Vaishnava etiquette, how to associate with the Vaishnavas. You read the pastimes of how Lord Chaitanya would associate with his, you know, different associates, how he himself conducted himself as a sannyasi, how he conducted himself as a grihastha. You know, there's very nice instruction there. And it's not according to speculation, just like we'll see here in the next verse. Krishna talks about, you know, the religious duty of a woman is to sincerely serve her husband. And he discusses a little bit there. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in one of these coming purports, he also quotes, I think he quotes from the Bhagavatam. I think it's the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam. He's just talking about, you know, how, you know, a woman should conduct herself. You know, he's kind of, again, he's having a little bit of a dig at the gopis there, saying, well, you know, actually, you know, you should be at home serving your husbands. And then they say, but you are our husband. We don't know anyone but you. So they feel completely justified in what they're doing. But Krishna's pointing out, and we'll see this, that all throughout the scriptures, Bhagavatam, etc., there's many different injunctions are given here, many different instructions are given for us to understand how to conduct our life, how to live our lives properly as devotees of Krishna. And not just as devotees of Krishna, as human beings. In the, I think it's the 30th chapter of the 7th canto, I'm not sure, it's the last four chapters after the story of Prahlad Maharaj, then Narad Muni, he talks about Vana and Ashram, he talks about, you know, the four social orders and the four divisions, occupational divisions. And right in the beginning of that section, he discusses 30 qualities, you know, things like honesty, cleanliness, etc. And he just goes through a whole list of 30 qualities. And he says, these are the basis of human life. He talks about, you know, without these qualities, he says that actually one's not considered to be a human being. And then Srila Prabhupada, I was listening to a lecture a few days ago, and he was talking about, he says, without following the four regulative principles, you know, no intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, one cannot even be considered to be a human being. So these things are like very basic understandings. So, you know, our acharyas are giving us these instructions, you know, in the Bhagavatam these instructions are given us, in order for us to understand how to behave ourselves, how to conduct ourselves properly. So then we can come. I was listening to something yesterday, Prabhupada was talking about, he was talking about different injunctions in the scriptures, and he was giving a very interesting analogy. He was talking about how, you know, in the land where you live, you know, there are rules. Just like you drive down the road, and what's the rule here? You stay on the left. And if you don't follow that, what happens? They give you a ticket, they give you a fine. Yet, yeah, so if you drive down the right-hand side of the road, then they're going to give you a ticket for danger, reckless driving or something like that. Yeah. But what if a dog walks down the right-hand side of the road? Well, then, huh? Yeah, but they don't give him a ticket. No. He doesn't get booked for it. So these rules, just like we see in the Shastra, these rules are for human beings. Yet one who's not following the very basic standards, like we say, no meeting, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, not even considered to be human beings. So these different types of rules here, you can't, you know, go and tell people like we see in the next verse that Krishna is saying the highest religious duty for a woman is to sincerely serve her husband. He's talking about this you know, elevated religious duty, but we can't present these types of religious duties to people who haven't even come to the standard of human life because they just don't understand, they just don't accept it. What we need to do first is to encourage them to come to the basic principles of human life and follow things such as, you know, no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. So I found this very interesting that Krishna is saying here that all living entities possess a natural attraction. So this is, to me, this is the essence of this Krishna consciousness movement is that, yes, every living entity is nothing but a servant of Krishna, but they've forgotten it for the time being. So our business is to somehow or other reawaken this natural attraction within them. And it's a very simple thing. It's just like I was mentioning, I was listening to that class yesterday where Prabhupada was talking about. It's actually a really interesting class. I'm not sure if it's a class or not. It's Prabhupada, when he wrote that, I'm sure you must have come across it, Prabhupada's homage to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that appears in the Vyasa Puja book every year. So one of his disciples had found it in a copy of The Harmonist in London. And Prabhupada was, it's interesting because he was a little bit embarrassed. It's very, you know, it's quite nice because he was expressing some humility there. He says, you know, I thought they were all lost, and you know, and then you were found, and he had this kind of nervous, uncomfortable laugh. And then he was reading it, and he was explaining the reading of it to his disciples. And he was just talking about Bhaktisiddhanta. It's recorded in 1976. If you ever get the chance to listen to it, it's very nice. And in there he was talking about how the natural position of all living entities is to be a servant of Krishna. And he was explaining the fact that we've taken up this Krishna consciousness means that we're all originally Krishna conscious, means that this is our relationship with Krishna. Because he's explaining, you know, he went on to explain how the living entities are eternal and that cannot change. So understanding this, you know, we should at least, you know, intellectually accept this and understand it, that this is actually the nature of every single living entity, not just the human beings. You know, the plants, the animals, the fish, the you know, all the aquatics, the you know, trees, insects, whatever. All living entities. This is actually their constitutional nature, but because of their material desires, because of this, you know. What's that? Prakriti Purusha's Stohi Mukti Prakti Janguram Kananam Guna Sangha Sarasad Jami Jamasa. Because they're trying to exploit, because they're trying to enjoy the forces of the material nature, they become controlled by material nature. And thus they meet with various auspicious and inauspicious births in this world. So we need to see that. Essentially, very few living entities get auspicious births. I mean, how many auspicious births do you see? Practically the only auspicious birth you could get is to take birth as a devotee. But even that, there's an interesting, in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto, Lord Brahma, he says this perception of auspicious and inauspicious in the material world is actually a mental concoction, because everything here is inauspicious. In essence, because why? Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshana. You're forced to take, you know, birth, death, old age, disease. You have no choice in the matter. And also Kapila Devi points this out in the third canto. So the living entities in this world, they're all in various inauspicious situations, which is brought about by their own material desires, which is brought about by their own desire to lord it over material nature, to be the controller, to be the enjoyer. This is what everyone wants. Everyone's searching for enjoyment in this world. Yet, out of ignorance, out of ahankara, thinking that I am this body, that these senses, this is me. Therefore, acting with this false impression, they're trying to enjoy a lump of matter. It's just, if you can just like logically separate yourself from the body, you know, just like at least intellectually separate yourself from it and look at it and think, what is going on here? Here is this lump of matter. Now there's, you probably walked along, is it Victoria Avenue? I always can't remember if it's Avenue or Street or Road or whatever, Victoria, whatever it is up here. And halfway up towards the Albert Park shops, there's a one of those personal training places, you know, where you do exercises. Yeah? And in the window, they've got a table there, and they say, do you want to lose a pound of body fat? And they've got this blob of something sitting on the table, and they say, a kilogram, sorry. When I was brought up, it was all pounds and shillings and pence and all that sort of stuff. But they've got this kilogram of a blob of something, and it doesn't look very nice, you know, whitish sort of gooey stuff sitting on the bench there, and they're saying, this is a kilogram of fat. So that's the kind of stuff the body is made out of. It's not very sightly. If you've ever seen, you know, a car accident or like an animal, you know, what they clinically call roadkill these days, you know, some poor living entity has been squashed on the road. You ever see something like that? Not last time. You remember that time that you had to go back early and I went over to Mayapur? Remember you left Vrindavan? So then when I was on the way, I don't know if I told you this, when I was on the way to Mayapur, there was an accident and someone on a push bike had been run over by a truck. And it was literally, their body was literally spread all over the road, and it was a very unsightly thing. And like all the people are just like standing around, you know, just looking at it. So if you get the opportunity to see these things and actually contemplate, my body is exactly the same as that. There's no difference between my body and this stuff on the road here. There's blood and pus and bones and, you know, all just like squished all out of the road. It doesn't look nice. And that's what my body is. But because I have some relationship with the body, I'm so attached to it. I identify with this body. And I think that this is the vehicle of my enjoyment in this material world. We all do it. It's not like, you know, anyone's unique. Of course, if one understands the nature of the self, then that's a different thing. But every living entity in this material world is doing that. And also thinking that this is my body, this is my vehicle of enjoyment, and those who I have relationship with. Everyone I have a relationship with, also I enjoy it in that way. So it's just a matter of relationship. And when we misunderstand the relationships, therefore we act improperly. And there's so many, you can see many, many misunderstandings of relationship. Just like we can see there's the basic rasas, you know, shanta, dasya, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya. So say for instance someone has a relationship with the mother. Right? And we understand this is what's called a vatsalya relationship, you know, parent to child relationship. But then if someone starts to have conjugal desires towards their mother, you know, in the madhurya type of thing, then this is considered perverse. So because, and why is that? Because it's a misunderstanding of the relationship. So in the same way, we have the same type of misunderstanding. We are thinking that this is my vehicle of enjoyment. But it's not, because it's not me. I'm not this body. I'm the living entity inside of this body. And as soon as I can come to this understanding of my actual situation, then I can actually really understand how to enjoy in this world. And what is the situation? What is my situation? My situation is that I am a servant of Krishna. And Krishnadas Kaviraj points this out. Prabhupada quotes this verse so many times. Jivera Swarupahoi Krishnera Nityadas. That actually, Swarup, my own form, my original form, is a servant of Krishna. Jivera, the Jiva, of the Jivera, of the Jiva. Swarupahoi. That his own form, Krishnera Nitya Das, an eternal servant of Krishna, not changing, never changing, cannot change. What's that? Najayate Mriyate Vakadachin Nayam Bhutva Bhavata Vana Bhuya Ajo Nityo Shashvato Yang Panano Nahanyate Hanyamane Shavire. The soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, ever existing, primeval, not slain when the body is slain. There is no change in the nature of the living entity. What happens is we become forgetful, we become covered over. Just like, you know, if you wear coloured glasses, you know, there was a big thing when I was a kid, there was a, he's still around actually, Johnny Farnham sang this song, Rose Coloured Glasses. Yeah? And it was because in the hippie era, that was like all, you know, you look through rose coloured glasses and everything looks rosy, looks very nice. Yeah? So he was singing about these rose-coloured glasses, and many people used to wear coloured glasses in those days, rose ones and blue ones and different things. So when you look through a pair of rose-coloured glasses, everything looks rose-coloured. So in the same way, we have this filter of the body, and we look through the filter of the body, we experience the world through the filter of the body, and so we think it's like that. Atmavan manyate jagat, because I'm experiencing like that, that's the way it is. Just like I have a human body, so when I look at the world through a human body, I perceive the world in a particular way. But what if it's a dog body? If you're perceiving the world through a dog's body, if you have a dog's body, then you look at the world in a different way. Just like I was walking to the temple the other day, and there was a group of people up there with the dogs, you know, and they're all sort of the people talking around, and I was noticing the dogs, and I mean, I hope I never take that birth again. It's like, the dogs are just like, you know, the male dog there, and he's sniffing the backsides of the other dogs, and oh my God, you know, just imagine having to take that birth. It's actually, if you analyze and look at the things that are going on in this world and just be a little bit, you know, introspective about it and just look carefully at what's happening. Don't just walk past life like it's just, oh, it just goes on, you know. Take notice of what's happening around you. Take notice of the condition the living entities are in. Take notice of the condition you're in. Just because we come to the temple every day doesn't mean that we're anything, you know, wonderful. Doesn't mean we've achieved anything. If we don't, you know, act on the opportunity we have. We have this wonderful opportunity. Krishna has given us this extraordinary opportunity. This, what does Prahlad Maharaj says? He says, Dulabham Manasan Janma, this rare, so rare, this 8,400,000 species of life, 400,000 of those are humans. If you count the living entities on this planet, how many of those are human beings? Was there 4 or 5 billion? there's probably, you know, billions of times more than that living entities in this room. You know, just you take a cubic inch of space, how many living entities are occupying a cubic inch of space? You probably couldn't calculate it. There's so many living entities. Huh? I don't know, but there's just unlimited living entities. So that we have this opportunity. You know, Prahlad Maharaj says, Komana Ache Pragyo Daman Bhagavatamiham Durvam Manasam Dhamma Tadapi Adhuram Arjadam. That this, you know, one who is sufficiently intelligent, he says this, who has sufficient grey matter in their head, should use this human form of life, this rare, very rare human form of life, right from the very beginning. And Prabhupada translates that as meaning from the tender age of childhood, from 5 years old, to take up the practices of devotional service. So we have this unique opportunity. Let's not be foolish and waste this and just, you know, come here, chant Hare Krishna, take Krishna Prasad, follow the four regulative principles and not take it any further than that. Krishna's given us such a wonderful opportunity, you know, the spiritual master, Lord Chaitanya, the Guru Parampara, they've all given us such a wonderful opportunity to end this cycle of birth and death in this very life. If we seriously take up the practice of devotional service, if we, you know, take stock of ourselves, seriously look at what am I doing in this world? How am I acting in order, right now, how am I acting in order to help myself go forward in Krishna consciousness? How am I acting to overcome the influence of my false ego? How am I acting to become God conscious right now? What am I doing about it? And just keep working like that. You know, take notice of the things that are going on around us in this world. Look at these poor living entities who are in the most abominable conditions. They take birth as hogs and dogs and cats and mice, and, you know, they're sitting out here taking prasadam. There's a little marsupial in the garden. So fearful. He's like nibbling down there, he's looking around to see if there's anything coming to eat him. You look at what happens in like the insect world, for instance. I know Ramai Swami talks about this quite a bit. We had one experience once in Brisbane. We're chanting in our rounds, and there was some, I can't remember what sort of insect it was. It was on the floor, and the bird thought, if I leave him here, he'll get squashed. So I put him outside. Put him outside, the bird came down, swooped, ate him like that. Yeah? And you see that happens, like they, you know, like insects, they rip each other apart. Rip off the legs, rip off the head, rip off this, rip off that, and just eat it. Or ants, you ever seen ants get a hold of something? You know, like a worm or something going on, and they just eat it bit by bit alive. And these living entities are suffering such a horrible condition. You know, Prabhupada talks about how we're inventing all these new forms of enjoyment. He says all we're doing is inventing further suffering. Just like you see these people, you know, like out the front here, they do their they have the thing they hold up in the air and they scoot along. All they're doing is inventing, creating some suffering for themselves. Because what happens? They're flying along on that thing, you know, and I remember last year we were walking down here, my wife and myself were walking down towards the St. Kilda, down the marina there, and there's a pole there, like in the water. There's this one guy, he's got his thing up in the air, and he's like flipping up in the air, and he's going over the top of the pole. It looks really good when he actually does it, but sometimes maybe it happens that he misses and he hits the pole. And so that's one form of suffering that accrued from. You see people, you know, riding on their surfboards. How many accidents do people have on those things? Huh? I remember my brother one time, he was real proud, he bought himself this, what they used to call a hot dog board, you know, they're not very big. And he got it out, and the first time there, he slipped and bam, right in his face, and he broke his nose, and blood everywhere, you know. So they're just creating suffering. And then what happens is they become so attached to this surfing business. And they see the dolphins out there and they think, wow, I wish I could surf like that. No problem. Next life you can do it. Whole life you can be out there surfing in the waves. And dolphins are amazing. Like sometimes, I don't know, has anyone ever seen the dolphins come out the front here every year? They're amazing, you know, the way they can jump around in the water and do all these different types of things. But one thing they can't do, is they can't practice religious principles. They can't practice the activities of devotional service. Why? Because they're bound up in an animal's body. So all the living, all these animals, etc., they're like that. You know, I mean, so, you know, people foolishly think, oh, I'd love to be a dolphin. I'd love to be a horse. You know, if I was a horse, imagine the sex life I could have. Because they see horses very powerful in their sex life. You know, and they have these aspirations to have sex, you know, 5, 10, 20 times an hour. No problem. Krishna will arrange it for you. Not even Krishna, the material nature will arrange it for you. Take birth as a pigeon. Pigeons can have sex, you know, 10, 20, 30 times an hour. No problems. And if a human has sex that often, they get sick. They wind up with all sorts of problems. They wind up with venereal disease, AIDS, etc. So many problems. So, foolishly, we see these living entities foolishly in this material world. They're making so much endeavor to enjoy through the agency of the body, not understanding that this is not me, not understanding that I am something else from this body. So it's our duty, not just our business, but it's our duty as followers of Srila Prabhupada, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because we have, at least, you know, maybe we don't have realization, maybe you do, I don't know. I know that I don't have realization on this matter. I have some intellectual understanding that I'm not this body. But not only am I not this body, but also all these other living entities, they're not the body. But unfortunately, we're all suffering under this, we have this affliction where we're thinking that I am the body, and that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. We're all going on in this way. And this will cause us to take further and further births. As it says, Brahmanda, Brahmajikona, Bhagavanji, Guru, Krishna. Some living entities are going up, some living entities are going down. And this is just going on and on and on. You see, living entities are going up and down this material world throughout many, many, millions upon billions of births. They're here for so many, you know, lifetimes, until they get this opportunity. There's actually there's an interesting explanation in the Nectar of Devotion. I think it's the second chapter, I'm not sure, where it's talking about, you know, the rareness of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami goes on to describe how one gets the opportunity to take up the practice of devotional service. And he's saying that actually one cannot come to devotional service. The one who's taken up devotional service is proof that they've performed devotional service in a previous life. So then he raises the discussion, is how does one get the opportunity to take up devotional service if they haven't performed it in a past life? And he says, by the mercy of a pure devotee. So Srila Prabhupada, when I was listening to his lecture yesterday, he was talking about how he came to the, you know, how Bhaktivinoda Thakur had this great desire to start up, you know, this preaching, and how then it was taken up by his spiritual master. And he says, now I've also taken up, and now I'm giving it to you. This is my legacy to you, to take up this preaching mission and to spread this Krishna consciousness. So this is actually the activity of all devotees in this Krishna consciousness movement, is to dedicate their lives. What's that? Bharata Bhumi Manasa Janmaya Jamma Sadhaka Kari Kari Para Upakara. To actually give their lives for this welfare activity, for the benefit of all living entities. This Prabhupada, he talks about this para upakar, meaning the supreme welfare activity. It means to give your life for the benefit of others. And what does that mean? Because Prabhupada discussed about, you know, sometimes you see different Mayavadis. You know, they take sannyas and they set off on their quest to become Narayan. You know? And they come down from that platform and they perform welfare activities, they open up hospitals, they plant trees, dig wells, all these different types of things, you know. And he says that actually, you know, they haven't actually achieved the goal, they've fallen from the goal, because they don't actually understand. They're thinking that these mundane things such as opening up hospitals and food distribution, etc., they're thinking that these are actually welfare activities, these are the highest welfare activities. But Prabhupada explains, the highest welfare activity is you give your life for the benefit of others. And what is that benefit? Is to give them the knowledge of their relationship, the sambandhagyan, to help them to understand who they really are. Because if you don't understand who you are, then everything else beyond that is just simply a waste of time. It's just like in mathematics. If you don't understand the basic, you know, formulas, just like when we all went to school, and you know, when you're doing mathematics, I'm sure that everyone who went to school in Australia, in the back of their maths book, had the 12 times multiplication table. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 this way, and 1 to 12 this way. And you just, you know, that's how you learnt mathematics. You learnt the basic rules that 1 plus 1 is 2, 1 times 1 is 1, 1 times, you know, you'll learn all this type of stuff. Yeah? So if you don't know the basic formula, if you think 1 plus 1 equals 3, how are you going to go when you get to quadratic equations? And calculus and algebra stuff, you're going to have no idea. You're just going to make so many mistakes. So this whole, you know, civilization is running on a miscalculation, on misinformation, thinking that they are the body. And practically speaking, it's only devotees of Krishna, only servants of Krishna, who understand anything different. It's only the devotees of the Lord who actually understand, no, I'm not this body. At least intellectually understand, I'm not this body. I'm a servant of Krishna. And my business is to please him somehow or other. So this is our business also, is to help others to understand that. And then we're actually properly utilizing the human form of life. Then we're actually helping them to understand what is the purpose of their human form of life also. Don't waste your time simply trying to satisfy the body, because the reality is you never will. It's not possible. It is not physically or human possible to satisfy the senses. Can't be done. Don't waste your time. Dushpraena alena cha. Krishna, in the third chapter of the Gita, he's talking about how this lust, he says, Dushpraena alena cha. It is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. So anyone who's ever seen a large fire, it doesn't matter how much fuel you put on the fire, it doesn't go out. In a small fire, yeah, if you put a lot, you know, if you have a little fire, you try to light a fire. Sometimes when you do yakis, you put too much wood on at one time and it puts the fire out. Yeah? But if you have you know, if you have a small fire, if you just put a little bit, then it gradually gets bigger. But if you have a big fire, it doesn't matter how much wood you put on it, it will not put it out. It'll just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, just like a forest fire. So this is the situation in this material world. It is, you know, affected by lust, you know, as Krishna says, kamesh, krodesh, vajigunas, mudva. Because Arjuna is asking, you know, he says, by what is one impelled to sinful activities, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force. And this is what it seems sometimes. You see sometimes people, they're acting in ways, it's like that, you know, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. They're just pushed by lust. And they keep trying to satisfy this lust. You know, we see, you know, all the living entities in this world, they're engaged in various ways. They have nightclubs where they go see, you know, they go drink alcohol, they dance with naked or near naked people, and just behave in so many stupid ways. I mean, you know, sometimes you see people when they get intoxicated, the things they do. And I won't, you know, I can remember some of the things that I was exposed to. I don't want to get into too much detail, but some of the things I was exposed to before I found out about Krishna. And I just think about it now, and it just makes my mind reel in disgust at some of the things that I witnessed. I mean, some of the people I used to hang out with were not particularly savoury people. And even by, you know, common perceptions, not by devotional perceptions, by, you know, ordinary perceptions. And some of the things they used to do, when they were sober, they weren't so bad. When they got drunk, it was like, oh my God, you know, just, even I sometimes were thinking, what are you doing? You know? So, and we see when people become intoxicated, they just do so many different types of things to try and satisfy their senses. But because they're functioning on a misconception, on misinformation, thinking this ahankara, this avidya, this ignorance of the nature of the self, thinking that I am the body, then they function in so many, or they act in so many foolish ways, which only serve to perpetuate this misconception. Because this is what happens, is the more we get involved in this avidya, the more we become covered by it, by the ignorance. The more we become bound up by the modes of material nature, the more we try to enjoy the material nature, the more we become ensnared. It's just like someone who takes drugs. You know, they may try a little bit just to see what it's like. Oh, that's nice, I'll take a bit more, I'll take a bit more. And they just keep taking more and more and more before they know they're a drug addict. And that's exactly the way it happens. You see, practically everything in this world functions like that. The more you try to enjoy it, the more you become, you know, this proclivity or this desire, this tendency to try to enjoy it. It grows and grows and grows until it becomes to the point is you're hooked. You become a junkie. And this is what happens when people, they take heroin. And this is why you see with people who sell narcotics, oftentimes, I don't know if it happens now, but oftentimes it used to be that they would give you free. Initially they give you some free just so you get the taste of what it's like, because then they've got you hooked, and they just know once they've got you hooked, they have steady income. And it's like that. So the material nature, she's like that. She just dangles little carrots in front of you all the time. That's her business, is to try to allure you, and she does a very good job of it too. It's like sometimes one name of material energy is Durga. So Durga means prison cell. It's a very interesting, because we know what prisons are like here in Australia, for instance, is they have walls and barbed wire and guards with spotlights and guns and things like that, you know. So if you try to get out, you can't be in a lot of trouble, you know, and if you really seriously try to get out, they'll shoot you. But here in this prison house in the material world, there's no fences, there's no barbed wire, there's no guards, no guns, spotlights, anything like that. Nothing. It's such a good prison house, nobody wants to leave. Huh? We keep ourselves here by our material desires because we want to enjoy it. We've got this perception that I am the body, aham mameti. I'm thinking that this is me, and as long as we think like this, as long as we act like this, you're bound up in this prison house. No chance of getting out. So it's a simple process. You know, this process of Krishna consciousness destroys avidya. It destroys it. It's like Krishna says, Tasmada Gyana Sambhutam Vrishtam Gyanit Chitvainam Samsa Atitushtista Bharata. He says, armed with knowledge, O Arjuna, stand and fight. Krishna's presented to Arjuna that you're not the body. You're the living entity inside the body. You're my servant. Armed with this knowledge, you know, it's in the fourth chapter of the Gita. You know, he's pointing out to Arjuna who he is. He says, you're not the body, the soul. And then in the third chapter, he's spoken to him about how lust and all these things, you know, work in this material world. So he's explained all these different things to him. And he says, now, armed with this knowledge, stand and fight. Stop your lamenting and get up on the chariot and fight. That's what you're here for. You're a warrior. You've come here to fight. This is my instruction to you. So the same thing is for us, is we have this knowledge of our constitutional position, and we have the knowledge of the constitutional position of all the other living entities in this world. Take that knowledge, understand it to the best of your ability. Understand you are suffering in this material world. Have no doubt about that. You are suffering. Who enjoys the cold weather? The only person I see here who's what I consider underdressed is Peter, so he must like cold weather. Huh? Yeah, I mean, we've all got many, many layers of clothing on. Why? Because we don't like being cold. It's a simple thing. Huh? If we like being cold, then we wouldn't have all these layers of clothing on. So, I mean, that's just a simple thing. We're suffering in so many ways, and the mind is giving us hell, day and night. So many things, oh, get me this, get me that. Oh, I'd like to get one of those. Oh, I'd like to get a new one of these. Get me a new bicycle. Get me a new, you know, MP3 player. Get me a new one of these. Get me a new one of those. I want a new car. I don't like the old car. I've only had it 2 weeks. So I don't like it anymore. Huh? Give me a new computer. It's just the senses are pushing, 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 and they'll never stop. They will never, ever stop as long as you try to satisfy them. It's just like anyone who's ever raised children knows, if you keep trying to satisfy the senses of the child every time they say, oh, mummy, buy me this, and you buy them that, will that satisfy them? Maybe for a minute or two. Probably not that long, maybe for about 30 seconds. You know, it's like you see them in the supermarket sometimes, they're pushing their kids around, and they say, mummy, I want chocolate. So mummy gets some chocolate, eat that. Mummy, I want this, eat that. And it just goes on and on. Before you know it, they get to the checkout and they've got, you know, a whole pile of wrappers sitting in the shopping trolley, all the stuff that they've tried to buy the kids. And what happens is as they get older and older, their material desires just increase. And that's exactly, you know, you think, that's only children. What makes you think you're so different? Because it's exactly the same thing for us, exactly the same. Is the more we try to satisfy the senses, the more we try to feed the fire of lust, the bigger it gets. And instead of asking for lolly wrappers, you're asking for, you know, fast cars and expensive computers and jumbo jets and rockets to the moon, and it goes on. You know, skyscraper buildings, and, you know, just there's no limit to it. And that's what happens. As soon as you try to satisfy the senses, they just want more and more and more and more. And that's the same for every living entity in this world. So our business is to understand very clearly our situation in this material world. Understand very clearly the means to counteract this suffering condition. And then apply it for ourselves and also give the knowledge to others. Because the success in the process of devotional service comes when we become dear to Krishna. Yeah? When we become, you know, Krishna is sees us as being very dear, then that's our success in life. And what is he saying? at the end of the Gita, he explains that yari dam paramam go yad mad bhakteshva vidashiti bhakti mai param kripa mami vaisha samasaya. There is no person in this world more dear to me than one who is delivering this message of the Gita to others. Yeah? And he says, na cha tasman manusheshu kashchin me kriya pritam kashchin me priya pritama bhavita na cha me tasmat anyo priya taro bhuvi. He says, there is no one as dear, nor will there be ever one as dear to me than that person. So just by taking the opportunity to give Krishna consciousness to others, he says, it says, yare dekhe tare kare Krishna upadesh. Whomever you meet, doesn't matter who it is. I remember one time I was in Sydney with Jai Advaita Maharaj, and we had taken down to the someplace just near the North Sydney Post Office. I think it was a computer place or something. His power supply had blown up, and we got out of the car, and there's a gentleman just got out of the car next to him, and just straight away he started talking about Krishna. Whomever you meet, instruct them on this knowledge of Krishna as it's given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says, yare dekhe tare kare Krishna amara agyai, amara, my agyai instruction, guru harate desh. You become guru and you deliver the people of this land. So that's what this Krishna consciousness movement is for. It's for delivering people this message of Krishna consciousness, to give them this opportunity to become God conscious, to give them the opportunity to give up their suffering condition of life. And in this way, go back to the spiritual world. So whatever you can do, whatever, you know, opportunity you have, use that opportunity to appreciate your situation in this world. To appreciate how you're suffering. Don't just go through life in oblivion, thinking that everything's wonderful, because it's not wonderful. It's a horrible place. Yeah? You think it's nice, wait a few years. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised that in a few years' time you're paying as much for water as you do for petrol. Because it's becoming rarer and rarer. You know? I mean, the reservoirs are down to 50% this year. What are they going to be next year? 25%? Less? Yeah? It's predicted in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam that there will be no rainfall in Kali Yuga. Just think that one thing, how much of a change that's going to make to your life. No rainfall. It's going to make it very, very difficult to live in this world. I mean, how can you be clean if you can't take bath? Let me give you some of those things you get on the planes, those little wipes, they've got alcohol in them, and you wipe yourself down. Imagine for a Brahmin, you have to clean yourself with alcohol. That's not cleaning yourself, that's contaminating yourself. But that's the way things are going in this world. It's going to get more and more and more difficult. So why get attached to this uncomfortable situation? Why get attached to someone banging a nail through your hand? It's a very uncomfortable situation. Realize how uncomfortable it is. Work on developing this understanding and seeing how difficult it is for everyone else in this world as well. It's a very difficult situation. You know, focus on becoming God conscious. Liberate yourself and liberate as many people as you can. This is our business. Okay, so thank you very much. Any questions at all? Yes, Mataji. So this is part of our nature is we're tathasta, means marginal. So one of the aspects of tathasta is that we can be influenced in one way or another. And because we have our own desire, we have independent desire, out of foolishness, we've chosen to try to be independent from Krishna, we've chosen to try to be the master. And that is an incompatible situation in the spiritual world, because there's only one master in the spiritual world. Everyone else is a servant. Now, as to why we chose that, who can say? There's actually, one time Prabhupada was asked that question. He said, well, why did the living entities choose to be separate? He said, yes, why? We have that independent nature, so therefore that gives us the possibility. And because we're Tathasta, we can be influenced one way or the other. Yet why we choose to do that, that's just foolishness. Because we have this situation in the spiritual world with Krishna, and somehow or other, out of foolishness, we chose, I want that. I want to be Krishna. And we see that every living entity in this material world, they're doing exactly that. They're trying to be God. But they just don't have it, and they just don't have it at all. They just don't understand what God means. They see Krishna enjoying, and they want to enjoy, because that anandamoy pyasa, that's our nature, to enjoy. And not these temporary, short-lived, petty enjoyments of this material world. Go out and drink alcohol and get intoxicated, or smoke drugs and get stoned. I mean, that's such a, and they drink so much alcohol they wind up vomiting all over the place. I mean, not that kind of enjoyment. Ananda means bliss. It doesn't just mean a little bit of, temporary happiness. This is our nature, is to be, eternally blissful. And the only way we can do that is when we're eternally connected with the eternally blissful person. Without the false, identification with the body. So the process of Krishna consciousness helps us to reawaken that. And by applying it seriously, then we can do it very rapidly. Our nature is eternal.
Then how can it change?
But our nature is not changing. It's a covering. It's a covering of matter. It's just you take your hand, you put a glove on your hand. The glove's not the hand. It's just covering. The hand is still there. The glove is covering it. And it gives it a different texture, different colour, so many different things like that. Yeah? It's just like, in the kitchen, the devotees working in the kitchen, they put these those gloves on, the food gloves, and they fit very tight. But it gives it different texture, different colour. Looks like the hand, but not quite. Yeah? A few different things there, So it's like that. We're covered, and it does look like this looks like me, because when I think I want to scratch my head, I don't have to type it in at the keyboard or anything like that. Hand scratch head, anything like that. No, it happens. So because the interface is so efficient. The interface that's designed by Krishna is so efficient, it seems like it is the self same thing. But it's not. It's not at all. And that gives you an idea of, because scientific people are so proud of their achievements in this world. Look at how we make these jets, these wonderful jet planes that keep crashing, and thousands and thousands of people are killed. They think it's such a wonderful achievement. Look at Krishna's achievement. He makes a little insect. And you can have a light. You see it sometimes in the summer, especially in Mayapur, you have light. And you'll see tens of thousands of living entities flying round and round and round that light. How many crashes are there? Not one. Not one single crash. Yet if you had 10,000 planes flying around Tullamarine Airport, how do you think they'd do? How do you think the air traffic controllers would go? They'd have a nervous breakdown. They just couldn't do it. But Krishna's creation is so amazing that you hardly notice that the body's not you. You don't notice. You don't notice you're in a prison. Such an extraordinary creation, such an extraordinary personality is Krishna, that he creates all this. It's an imposition, it's an artificial covering. Yet we think it's the real thing. Yeah, but when we try to create something, they make the movies and they try to create an artificial environment, and you can see it just doesn't look real, So that's the thing, is it's so well done by the Lord that you don't realise what's going on. But this is the beauty of this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you can actually understand what is going on here. Yeah? Now we understand what's going on. Let's do something about it for ourselves and for others. Don't take it cheaply. Don't you know, give up this rare human form of life. Just waste it indulging your senses. Use it for what it's meant for. There's that verse in Hitopadesha where it says, you know, that the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending are common to both man and animal. But the difference is that a man, human being, can practice religiosity. But if you don't practice religiosity, and it says, Dharmenahina Pashubhishamana, you're the same. You're just an animal. So use your human form of life, this rare human birth, for what it's meant for. And that way, go back to the spiritual world and be happy. Okay, thank you very much. Kuntra Srimad Bhagavatam ki Shambhavita Bhaktarindaki Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Nitya Gopremanandi.